Oh, I made reservations.
Where?
Where do you think?
I couldn't possibly guess. There are a number of popular trendy restaurants, but you would never go there. You eat where the locals eat.
You picked some little place no one's heard of, but everyone has a cousin who's tipped them off about.
My hairdresser, actually.
I can't wait.
Kristen's restaurant was everything Teddy had predicted it would be, a hole in the wall on the first floor of what appeared to be a private home. It was so non-commercial it had no name. At least none was proclaimed on the menu. On Kristen's advice, they simply ordered the daily special. They sipped wine, nibbled bread, and smiled at each other.
"I don't know what I'm allowed to ask you," Kristen said.
"Such as?"
"You just got here. Are you settled in?"
"I have an apartment. Agent Reynolds is probably searching it now."
"Do you know that?"
"No, but that's what I'd do. The problem with this job is that it breeds paranoia. At least that's been my experience. You don't look like you're afraid of anything."
"You really know how to flatter a girl, don't you? It's not how gorgeous you are, it's, gee, you're tough as nails."
"Tell me about yourself."
"Haven't you read my file?"
"Have you read mine?"
"How? It's redacted. You were never on a mission that wasn't classified. I suppose this one will be, too."
"More than likely."
"How can you say that? You don't even know what it is yet."
"I know it's top secret."
"How do you know that?"
"Because I'm on it."
"Oh, big-time spy. Is that how you get the girls?"
"You're confusing me with James Bond."
"Don't knock James Bond. He's the reason I joined the agency. I wanted to be James Bond. I wanted to do the things he does."
"Oh, really?"
"Well, not seduce girls, but the rest of it. I wanted to shoot bad guys and win at Chemin de Fer and sit eye to eye with megalomaniacs who wanted to rule the world and escape from their armed fortresses. It seemed so glamorous."
"And was it?"
"I got posted in Pittsburgh and Paris. No maniacs have tried to rule them yet. Of course, you know this from my file."
"I know what it says. I didn't know your attitude about it. Are you married?"
"Divorced. My husband was an insurance salesman. Couldn't get used to living with a spy. In retrospect, I can't blame him. I treated him like a civilian. What about you?"
"I was married. My wife's dead. A car accident a couple of years ago. I'm still not over it."
She looked in his eyes. "With you, I can't tell what's true and what's deep cover."
"Does it matter?"
"Did she know you were a spy?"
"Why? Didn't your husband?"
She smiled. "You are very good at what you do."
"I don't even know what that is."
"Neither do I, but you're very good at it. Has there been anyone since?"
"There was a woman for a while, but we live in different places. How about you?"
"Not really. That damn fool agent thinks he's in love with me, as if he had any chance."
"Reynolds?"
"No, not him. Morrow. Believe me, I've done nothing to encourage him."
"I believe you. After all, you've done nothing to encourage me."
"Except ask you out to dinner. Why do you think I did that?"
"I think you're highly competitive. I think every agent at the station wants to find out why I'm here, and you want to be first."
"You don't think it's your devilish charm?"
"I was being modest."
She smiled. "So what's it going to take to find out what you're doing here?"
"You could ask me."
"What are you doing here?" "I came to Paris to pick up attractive spies." "How's that going for you?"
"I'll tell you tomorrow."
34. When Teddy woke up, she was gone. He sat up in bed and looked around her apartment. He hadn't paid much attention to it the night before. It was only slightly cheerier than his.
She'd had time to decorate it, but there was little evidence of a woman's touch. Teddy's jacket was lying over a chair. It was in a slightly different position than when he'd left it. Teddy smiled. She'd gone through his clothes. He'd have been disappointed if she hadn't. She had left a note. "You don't have ours, but I do. See you there. Act casual." Teddy grinned. He found he was getting quite a kick out of Kristen. Teddy got dressed and headed out. He used evasive action, but no one was watching the apartment. He hailed a cab, got out a block from the embassy, and asked a passerby for the Café du Soleil. It was a little coffee shop down a sunny side street. There were tables out front, but Jacques wasn't there. Teddy peeked in the door and found him sitting over a cup of coffee. His laptop was open on the table in front of him. "So that's why you like this café. They have internet." Jacques looked up and smiled. "Ah, you took my suggestion. You seem like a man whose opinion I can count on. Please sit down." "Thank you." Teddy sat and ordered an espresso and a croissant. "I checked you out," Jacques said.
"Oh, why?"
"Because everyone else did. Right after you left, Agent Reynolds wanted to know what you were asking about."
"What did you tell him?"
"I told him you were looking for a place to eat."
"Was he happy to hear it?"
"He didn't seem happy."
"I get the impression he really isn't. I'm glad you didn't tell him about Larrington."
"Why?"
"Because I don't know what it means yet, and until I do, people underfoot are a nuisance."
"Do you think there's something to it?"
"You did."
"What makes you say that?"
"You told me about it."
"Yes, I did."
"Why?"
"I suppose I was passing the buck."
"Your English idiom is very good."
Jacques frowned.
"You don't want to know what I mean?"
"I know exactly what you mean. You think the reservations at Larrington mean something."
"But you made your report. No one took it seriously, and you don't want to become known as a pest. On the other hand, if I take an interest, you're off the hook."
Jacques grinned. "Got me. Am I no longer your friend?"
"No, I like you even better. All right, here's the deal. I'd like to know a little more about these reservations. Check them out again, see if anything else pops up. Though let's not bring it up at the agency. This is just between you and me. Are you here the same time every morning?"
"More or less."
"Let's make it more. See if there are any more bookings of that nature, and get me some details on the ones you found. We'll meet back here tomorrow. Is that all right with you?"
"It is."
Jacques put up his hands apologetically.
"I would kind of like to know who I'm dealing with."
Teddy smiled.
"You accessed my files and got nothing."
"Yes."
"May I use your laptop?"
"You can't access agency files from here."
"Let me see." Teddy swung the computer around, typed in a few codes, and swung it back. Felix Dressler's file was on the screen.
Jacques was astonished.
"How did you do that?"
"Want to see another trick? I'll open one of the classified missions for you."
Teddy opened a file labeled Afghanistan, K and R.
"That's kidnap and ransom. It was a clandestine mission because the United States doesn't ransom prisoners."
"But you do?"
"Not at all. But the enemy thought I would, and we got our prisoner back."
"Now then, that's who I am, and that's the type of thing I do. Read about it and close the file. Don't worry about security. When you close it, it won't open again. Anyway, that's a glimpse at who I am. You have to make up your mind about me. I'm gambling that you'll do the right thing. I'll be here tomorrow morning. I hope you will, too."
"That's all you want to know? About the reservations at Larrington?"
"For starters. When I hear what you've found, I hope it leads to something else."
Jacques took a breath.
"I'll be here."
"Good." Teddy stood up and tossed money on the table. "I'll leave first," he said.
He figured Jacques would like that.
35. Teddy walked a few blocks until he found a hotel. He went in as if he belonged there and asked if they had computers for the guests. The concierge directed him to the back of the lobby, where a small business office was set up with computers, a printer, and even a fax machine. Teddy logged onto one of the computers and sent an encrypted email to Millie Martindale, reporting his progress. It was short, as there was none. He logged off and left the hotel. Teddy went back to the apartment Dino had rented for him, the one no one knew about. Nonetheless, he checked to see that it was undisturbed and that no one had planted any bugs. When he was satisfied, he took out a new burner phone and called Kevin Cushman in Washington, D.C. Kevin was not a part of the federal government, at least not officially, but Teddy had used him on occasion. Kevin lived with his mother and spent most of the day lounging around in his pajamas playing video games. That, coupled with his screen name, Warplord 924, gave the impression he was a college dropout, but Kevin was actually a well-respected computer technician pulling down six figures a year. Kevin was glad to hear from him.
"Is this who I think it is?"
"It is, and thank you for not saying the name."
"I'm not sure I know the name."
"I'm grateful nonetheless."
"Is this an official call?"
"It is."
"What do you need?"
"Something impossible."
"I'm your man."
"I need to know if there's been an internet search for a particular name. Can it be done?"
"It depends on how it's trending. How many searches are we talking about?"
"One."
"You want to know if one person has searched for this name?"
"I know it doesn't sound promising."
"Hey, you had me at impossible."
"Can it be done?"
"It'll be tough. You take any given name and someone will have searched for it sometime."
"Within the last 2 days?"
"That helps. Tell me, you didn't do an internet search for this guy yourself, did you? Because then I'd get a false positive."
"I didn't."
"Can you do it?" "Hang on, I'm thinking."
"I'll mark it on my calendar."
"Huh?"
"That's the first time I gave you something hard enough you had to think about it."
"This is going to take a little time. Can I call you back?"
"All right, just this once. But after that, I contact you."
"Gotcha. What's the name you're tracing?"
"This time it's Melvin Melbourne."
"This time? Boy, you give a guy an inch," Kevin said, and hung up.
He called back 15 minutes later.
"No one has searched for Melvin Melbourne in the last 2 days."
"Can you tell me how you know?"
"How much time have you got?"
"Point taken. So you can search for any name, but I can't.
Unless you want to start computer classes."
"Okay. Keep checking on that name. If you get a hit, can you tell if the search originated in Paris?"
"Of course." "In that case, make a note, and we'll discuss it the next time we talk."
"It's probably just my quarry satisfying his curiosity, but if you get a search originating in another country, that's pay dirt. In that case, send me an encrypted email with the word yes. If I need to, I'll get in touch."
"Will do. Is that all?"
"Until I give you the next name."
Teddy went back to the embassy and asked the young man at the front desk for Agent Norton. This time he was shown right in.
"So," Norton said, "any progress?"
"Nothing worth reporting. I just wanted to give you a heads up."
"Oh?"
"From what I've observed, there's nothing much going on at the moment. I'm probably the most exciting thing that's happened in months. Your agents are eager to know what I'm about. It occurs to me I may be followed, and since your men are good, I wouldn't necessarily know it. While I'm in Paris, while I'm in any city for that matter, I keep getaway money and a spare passport in a locker at the train station. Should one of your agents report this, just keep it quiet, will you?
Don't put it in a report or pass it on to the other agents. It's just between you and me. You're planning on taking off? I'd hate to break your heart, but if I'm given a pressing assignment, yes.
Will they tell you what it is?
Teddy smiled.
Two other field agents are here today, if you'd like to meet them.
I hope they didn't come in from the cold just to meet me, Teddy said.
Norton ignored the comment, but Teddy got the impression that Paris was not typically an active enough location to merit undercover work.
So who have we got?
Agent Valerie Paul was particularly eager to meet you.
By all means, show her in.
Valerie Paul was the type of woman who might have been the Paris office's sexy shill if they hadn't happened to already have Kristen Rowan. Teddy wondered if that rankled. Valerie had brown hair, blue eyes, and a suspicious nature. Teddy knew she'd be following him from the moment he said hello.
"So, what are you doing here, Agent Dressler?" she asked.
"I'm here on assignment, so something is going to happen. I've been talking to the people at the agency trying to figure out what that is."
She smiled. "And you expect me to believe that?"
"I'd be disappointed if you did. I doubt if they sent me here just to find out if agents were gullible."
Before she could respond, he added, "So what are you doing here? I understand you're on assignment."
"Just routine. There are certain foreign nationals we keep track of when they're in town. I handed off my assignment to Agent Kristen Rowan early this morning. I believe you met her yesterday."
"I probably did," Teddy said. "I met so many agents."
Valerie smiled.
"Yes, she said I'd find you deflective."
"That was actually in my profile before I got it redacted."
The intercom buzzed. Norton picked it up, listened, and said,
"Send him in."
A young agent came in. He was slightly shorter than Agent Reynolds, but a rough and ready type. Teddy would have picked him in a fight. He looked like he needed a shave. It went with his image.
"This is Agent Workman," Norton said. "Agent Workman, this is Agent Dressler, temporarily on assignment."
Workman shook Teddy's hand.
"Temporarily?"
Teddy shrugged.
"I go where they tell me."
"And they told you to come here?"
"Yes."
"What for?"
"I assume they're preparing for something."
"They haven't told you what?"
"They never tell me more than they have to. You know how it goes."
Agent Workman gave a look as if he didn't really know how it goes at all, as if, in fact, he felt Teddy was full of bullshit. Teddy couldn't blame him.
"Look, guys, I'm on your side. I won't be able to prove it until something happens, but when it does, you'll be glad to have me. In the meantime, what do you say we get out of the station chief's hair and let me treat you to a cup of coffee?"
"Coffee's free.
Even better."
Teddy took them down to the commissary. Jacques looked up from his computer as they went by, but it was just a casual glance. He didn't try to catch Teddy's eye. They got themselves coffee and sat at one of the tables.
"All right," Teddy said. "Now that we're not being judged by the boss, let's get down to brass tacks. Something happened here, and someone knows what it is. I don't necessarily mean in the agency. It could be something in town. Whatever it was enough to raise a red flag and result in my presence. So what's been going on recently? Is there any little thing, any incident, that could have raised the alarm?"
"Rami disappeared," Workman said. Valerie shot him a glance.
"Well," he asked, "it's not like we fucked up or anything. It's something that happened in the last few weeks."
"Tell me about it."
"Not much to tell. We monitor certain foreign diplomats."
"If you can call them diplomats," Valerie said.
"That is the polite term. Enemy agents or spies would be more accurate. Anyway, one of the Middle Eastern agents we were concerned with, Rami, a Syrian, was here for a few days, and we were keeping tabs.
Suddenly, he was gone. It doesn't have to mean anything. People change their plans, people get called home. Was this of any particular concern?
None. It's the sort of thing that happens from time to time, but when you ask for any incident, we're hard-pressed to come up with one. That's the only one I can think of, and that's stretching it.
I'll say, Valerie said. She seemed more than a little defensive. Teddy wondered if she had been on duty when the man disappeared.
Was there anything to indicate the man had dropped out of sight as opposed to just going home?
It was sudden and unexpected, Workman said.
Why? What did you expect him to do?
We expected him to be in town for a week.
That's what his plans were. He'd only been here 2 days when he dropped off the map.
Could it be because he noticed he was under surveillance?
Valerie bristled.
No, but if you want to take it that way, feel free.
It's a tough business, Teddy said. You're watching people, someone else is watching you. Somehow or other it all means something, but you can't spend your time wondering if you had a good day. I'm just trying to sort out what happened. I'm trying to figure out why and what you base your opinion on. If you were under the impression that you were spotted, that would support your conclusion that the guy took off.
But no one's blaming you. Don't fall into Norton's trap. He thinks I'm here to reassess the station. He's afraid for his job.
Don't be afraid for yours.
That isn't what I'm thinking at all, Valerie Paul said.
I'm glad to hear it. This guy who disappeared, Rami, how do you know he planned to be here for a week?
That's how long his hotel reservation was.
He was staying at a hotel?
Which one?
Larrington.
36. Teddy led Valerie Paul to the Gare de Lyon railway station. He opened locker 27, which had Daniel Remington's passport, and took out $500. Then he led her back to his apartment. Having spent the previous night at Kristen's, Teddy hadn't been back since he had led Agent Reynolds there. Teddy checked the apartment out. The lock on the door had been picked. It was skillfully done. Still, Teddy could see fresh scratches. He went in and searched the apartment for bugs. He found one in the radiator grill and one in the overhead lamp. Those were easy to find, so Teddy suspected a third. He found it inside the roller of the window blind. Teddy destroyed the first two, but left the third one in place. It was important to let the agents think they were winning. Agent Valerie Paul was lurking down the street when Teddy left. He ditched her so she'd have a chance to check out the train station, and he'd have a chance to see his friends. Stone's Muse House was on a quiet cobblestone lane. The gate still had the massive wooden doors and sentry posts from when it had been a safe house. When the CIA had had occasion to house him there, Stone liked it so much, he bought it. With his typical self-assurance, he'd had the living room refurnished, including carpeting, artwork, and a grand piano, before even making an offer to Lance. The house had 4 bedrooms, including the master, which took up an entire floor. It had a small servants' quarters and a garage that came equipped with a Mercedes. Considering Stone didn't spend that much time in Paris, and also had access to the royal suite at Larrington, the little Muse house was quite sufficient for his needs. Stone and Dino were enjoying a fine cabernet in front of the fire when Teddy came in.
"Wine?" Teddy said.
"We're in France," Stone said. "I have to make concessions."
"Come warm your feet by the fire,"
Dino said. "My feet are perfectly warm."
"The thrill is that you can. It's a decadent luxury you don't normally get. Do you have a working fireplace in L.A.?"
"Yes."
"Spoils sport."
"So, did you crack the case yet?" Stone said.
"No. I met 5 field agents, any of whom could be the mole."
"Well, don't find them too soon," Dino said. Tonight we're going to the Folies Bergère.
Care to join us? Stone said.
I'm chasing down a lead.
Oh, does it look promising?
She looks very promising. I don't think she's the mole, but she's a wonderful lead.
Teddy changed the subject. So, where's my equipment?
It's locked up.
Can I see?
Sure.
Stone got up and led the way into the study. A massive floor safe stood in the corner. Stone spun the dial and swung the door open. Teddy's equipment bag was on its own shelf.
Perfect, Teddy said. I don't feel confident leaving it unsecured.
His cell phone rang and he dug it out of his pocket. It was Kristen.
I'm running late. Can you meet me for dinner?
Of course. Where?
8:30 at Le Maurice.
Le Maurice?
Teddy looked inquiringly at Stone. Stone nodded.
Expensive. Isn't that a little pricey for a girl on an agency salary?
It's all right. You're paying,
Kristen said, and hung up. 37. Teddy smiled at Kristen over the rim of his cappuccino. They had just finished a leisurely and delicious dinner in the opulent 18th-century dining room, and he was feeling good.
You haven't asked me about my assignment.
I figure if there'd been any progress, you would have told me.
Smart girl.
I, on the other hand, had a very eventful day.
Doing what?
Following the Undersecretary of Germany around so that Agent Valerie Paul could meet you.
Nice of you.
Nice had nothing to do with it. Valerie wouldn't take no for an answer.
She struck me as sane and sensible in a castrating sort of way.
Kristen smiled.
Did she make any catty references about me?
No, but I wasn't having dinner with her. I was just trying to explain that I wasn't after her job.
Her job?
There is a feeling in the agency, probably filtered down from Norton, that I'm here solely to assess the Paris station and see if changes need to be made.
Are you?
No, but if I were, I'd deny it. So it was tough to reassure her. I wouldn't be surprised if she was spying on us from one of the other tables.
Not on a CIA salary.
Indeed. What made you think I could afford this place?
Anyone under such deep cover would require immediate access to money. Your entire file is redacted.
You do the math.
Teddy pointed at the check, which had been discreetly slipped onto the table along with the coffee and cognac.
I've been wondering how I'm going to justify $1,000 dinner on the expense account.
This dinner was crucial to your operation.
Oh?
I have valuable information. You were hoping to get me inebriated to loosen my tongue.
Yes, I was, but it had nothing to do with getting information.
They finished up their coffee and Teddy settled the bill.
On their way out, Kristen said, I'm going to the ladies. I'll meet you outside.
Teddy walked out the front door. With his peripheral vision, he could see his shadow watching from the street corner. A little man, built like a fire plug, stepped from the shadows and aimed a gun at the back of Teddy's head. Teddy whirled and chopped down on his arm. The gun flew from the little man's hand and skittered across the street. Teddy didn't go for his own gun. He wanted the little man alive. The little man bent over. Teddy aimed a kick at the back of his head. It was Teddy's turn to be surprised. With amazing agility for one so short and stocky, the little man ducked the kick, grabbed Teddy's leg, flipped him sideways, and plowed in. Teddy hit the ground rolling. He struggled to his knees and managed to block the blows aimed at his head.
Felix!
Teddy glanced up. Kristen stood under a streetlight. Her hand flew to her purse and came out with a gun. The little man saw her. He scowled, turned, and fled. Kristen stood watching him go. Teddy got to his feet.
"Who the hell was that?"
Kristen said.
I don't know, but he seemed to resent my presence.
This isn't funny, Kristen said. Someone just tried to kill you. Isn't it time you stop playing games and tell us why?
I don't know why. I've never seen that man in my life. I hope I never see him again. I'm very glad you scared him off.
Teddy glanced around.
Where's his gun?
What gun?
He had a gun. I knocked it away.
I didn't see a gun. I must have come along just after.
It skidded across the street.
Teddy pointed. It should be over there.
It's not.
The other guy must have got it.
What other guy?
Teddy waved it away.
A routine shadow. He's not important.
Kristen was incredulous.
Not important? Why the hell was someone stalking you outside the restaurant?
Maybe he figured anyone who could afford to eat there would have to have money.
Come on, Felix. Why are you so important?
Teddy sighed.
I wish I knew.
38. Glenville caught up with Aziz two blocks away. He'd been calling his name, but Aziz paid no attention. Finally, Glenville grabbed him by the arm. Aziz spun with every intention of delivering a fatal blow.
"Can't you hear me?"
Glenville said, suddenly realizing he might not be able to. The man was mute. Some mutes were also deaf. He extended the weapon.
"Your gun. I managed to pick it up."
Aziz took the gun. If he appreciated the effort, he didn't show it. Glenville sighed. This was not his day. And the surly hitman was the least of it. Reluctantly, he pulled his cell phone out of his pocket. Fahd had been waiting for the call.
"Is it done?"
"No. The man is good. Aziz surprised him, but he disarmed Aziz, and they fought hand to hand."
"Aziz didn't win?"
"No. Another agent surprised him, and he took off."
"Another agent?"
"Yes, a woman. She had a gun." Fahd rolled his eyes.
"Oh, for God's sake. Did Aziz leave his gun behind?"
"No. I managed to retrieve it.
We can try again tomorrow." "Just tell me when it's done. Is Aziz there?"
"Yes."
"Put him on the phone."
Aziz took the phone and put it to his ear.
"Are you there?"
Fahd said. Aziz snapped the phone with his finger.
"Good," Fahd said. "Glenville doesn't need to know this, but you do. We need to get the job done, and we need to get it done before we arrive in Paris next week. I want this man taken care of at all costs. Kill him if you can, but if you can't, I want him gone. Do you understand me? I don't care if we have to sacrifice our mole. I want him out of town. He won't leave until he finds the mole. So if you can't kill him, kill the mole."
39. Agent Workman was outside Kristen's building when Teddy emerged the next morning. Teddy wondered if it was proprietary, if the young agent had designs on Kristen. It was not unlikely, and it would complicate things somewhat and make his motives more difficult to sort out. Kristen was still sleeping. Teddy wondered if Workman would follow him or stay behind to confront her. He walked down the street a block. Workman was following him. Teddy wondered if it was too early for the train station. He thought not. He hailed a cab and took it to the Gare de Lyon railway station. He went inside and opened the box of Arnold Mycroft. Teddy went outside, prepared to ditch the young agent, but he didn't have to. Workman stayed behind, presumably to search the locker. Teddy hailed a cab and took it to the Café du Soleil. Jacques was at his table. He looked pleased with himself. He could barely contain himself while Teddy ordered coffee.
"I have all the details," Jacques said. "I don't know what to make of them, but I found the connection."
"What do you mean?"
"It turns out the men I flagged are all registered for a conference at Larrington next week. It's a science conference and exhibition with over 1,400 attendees.
A science conference? What are they exhibiting?
Rare animals.
Teddy blinked.
What?
That's right. In addition to presentations and lectures, there will be select exhibits of rare animals and insects. Top zoologists from around the world will be attending.
As well as foreign arms dealers?
Yes, but not many. They're what tipped me off to the convention, but their presence is not at all significant.
How can that be?
Well, in the Syrian party, for instance, we have Fahd Kassin, a Syrian strongman, but not an arms dealer, his bodyguard and three zoologists. Their interest would seem to be entirely in the animals. Fahd is likely accompanying the party to keep the scientists in check.
What about the other arms dealers?
The same thing. All are part of a party that includes primarily zoologists.
Teddy frowned. And what are people doing at this conference?
They have talks and panels and presentations scheduled, as well as a banquet.
Which the Syrians are attending?
Yes. In fact, I hacked their website and downloaded their program. All the Syrians and all the other men flagged are attending one particular panel. It's a closed panel by invitation only. Rarest of the rare, a lecture by a renowned biology professor.
I see.
There is one other common thread. Several of the conference attendees are also big game hunters.
Teddy's mouth dropped open.
And they're all attending that panel?
Yes, all of them.
So there may be more to that panel than meets the eye.
Keep digging. Let me know if you find something.
How can I reach you?
Teddy took out a spare burner phone and gave it to him.
Text me from this phone. No message, just an address. I'll meet you there.
What address?
Choose someplace touristy, where there will be a lot of people. You don't have to say when. I'll come right away. Just text me where and go.
You think it's that important?
Something has to be.
40. Teddy checked in at the agency.
You got something? Norton said.
I'm afraid not. I just wanted to alert you to an incident.
Oh?
Agent Kristen Rowan and I were attacked last night after dinner.
Attacked?
Mugged, really. I was the target. Two men set on me, and Agent Rowan came along and scared them away.
Are you kidding me?
She was armed. She got the drop on them, and they fled.
Did you report this to the police?
No, we did not. I figured the agency didn't need the gendarmes messing around in our business. They're not going to find anything, which means they'd be here forever searching for a motive.
You're probably right.
Where did this happen?
Outside La Maurice.
You dined at La Maurice?
What can I say? I was trying to impress a young lady.
Did it work?
It's hard to make an impression when you have to be rescued. She was impressive, though.
You're treating this awfully cavalierly. Is there something about this attack you're not telling me?
One of the attackers had a gun. I knocked it away from him. Apparently the other one grabbed it because we couldn't find it.
Did they demand money?
It never reached that stage. I reacted the moment I saw the gun. That led to a brief hand-to-hand skirmish before Agent Rowan broke it up.
Were they trying to kill you?
Hard to say. A mugging certainly makes sense. I suppose the other agents should be on alert, but I think it's an isolated incident.
Norton frowned. He clearly wanted to say something, but couldn't think of what.
Teddy left the embassy. He was gratified to find Agent Morrow on his tail.
Morrow was the only agent besides Kristen who hadn't tailed him yet.
Teddy led him to the Gare de Lyon railway station. He went down and opened box 29 and took out $1,000 of Claude Fisher's money. He went back upstairs and managed to lose Agent Morrow in the station. The last thing Teddy saw was the pudgy agent heading downstairs to search his locker.
His phone bleeped with a text message. It was from Jacques. Top of Eiffel Tower. 41. Teddy got out of the elevator to find Jacques standing at the rail, looking out over the city. Teddy went up, leaned with his back against the rail, and cocked his head in Jacques' direction. The Eiffel Tower? Jacques shrugged. You said touristy. This better be good. It's not good, but it's something. I was mistaken when I said the Syrians had 3 zoologists in their party. 2 of the professors are zoologists, but the 3rd is a world-renowned microbiologist.
Really?
Yes, and there are microbiologists in each party.
Interesting.
There's more. Some of the men flagged as weapons dealers are actually weapons designers and constructors. It was the word weapons that was flagged, not the word dealers.
So this conference is actually about biological warfare?
As far as I can tell, the majority of the conference's presenters and attendees are legitimate, as is the programming, with the exception of that one particular panel they are all attending along with their scientists. That is by invitation only, and could well be a front for something involving biological weapons. Teddy thought that over.
Okay, let's keep this between us for now. You say another subgroup of this panel is big game hunters?
That's right. Though there is some overlap. Some of the big game hunters are also into arms sales.
Let's concentrate on them. Don't set off any alarms by investigating the microbiologists. Investigate the hunters. I'm particularly interested in any wealthy Americans who may be looking to spend big bucks to kill the rarest and most expensive big game. I want to know where they are, when they are going to get here, and where they intend to be in the meantime. Get me everything you can by tomorrow morning.
Fine. Do I text you where to meet?
Teddy smiled. Sorry to spoil your fun, but I'll meet you at the cafe.
42. As Teddy went down the Eiffel Tower, he checked to see if he was being followed. He wasn't. He took evasive maneuvers anyway, out of habit, then hopped in a cab and headed for Stone's house. Stone met him at the door in his bathrobe.
"Just getting up?" Teddy said.
Stone led him into the living room and offered him a drink.
"Where's Dino?"
"He's having lunch with the prefect of police. I imagine they're talking shop."
"I hope he doesn't eat too much."
"Why is that?"
"I thought we might go out tonight, if you can arrange a dinner."
"I can always arrange a dinner. Luckily, I have nothing booked. What did you have in mind?"
A svelte French woman, wrapped in a towel and dripping wet, yet somehow still effortlessly elegant, padded into the room.
"Monsieur Stone, I am in the shower for 20 minutes. You said you would scrub my back."
"Yes, Monique, but you see we have a guest. Monique, Felix. Felix, Monique."
"Monsieur," she said to Teddy, "please do not think I do not like you, but you are keeping me from having a clean back."
Teddy grinned.
"I did not realize you had a previous engagement, Stone."
"Don't worry, Monique, I won't be long."
Monique turned and padded out of the room.
"You were talking about dinner. What did you have in mind?"
"I was thinking of the Hotel Larrington."
"Really? Coles to Newcastle in my case, but I'm happy to show it off."
"I was hoping your co-owner could join us."
"Marcel? I'm sure he'd love to, if there's nothing he can't get out of. Let me give him a call. Is there a particular reason you want to meet him?"
"I was hoping to get some information about the hotel."
Stone's eyebrows raised.
"I know you're the co-owner," Teddy said, "but he's always here and has more intimate knowledge of the day-to-day. I was hoping to get some information about the convention next week, but there's no reason to tell Marcel that. It may be nothing, and I don't want to alarm him."
"Now you're alarming me."
What's happening at Larrington next week?
Animals.
43. Glenville paid off the cab and hurried down the street after the three men who were his quarry. The taxi he'd been following had driven up to the front door of Larrington, and he'd been forced to stop half a block away. As he drew near, he saw the three men he knew to be Stone Barrington, Dino Bichetti, and the one he was really concerned with, Billy Barnett, or whatever name he was using, go back into the very hotel where he'd picked them up to begin with. Slowing so as not to overtake them, he smiled at the bellboys and the valet parkers for whom he offered no business, and pushed his way into the lobby. Inside, a fuss was being made. Stone Barrington, recognized as the co-owner, was immediately descended upon by the concierge and the head clerk, eager to cater to his every whim. As if Stone were not enough of a celebrity himself, he was known to be dining with Marcel Dubois, which pushed his importance off the chart. The maitre d' was summoned from the restaurant to personally escort them into the dining room. Glenville watched all this with misgivings. Aziz would want a quiet location to make another run at Barnett, some out-of-the-way place, at the owner's table in the main dining room, being catered to by waiters, wine stewards, and possibly the chef himself, would never do. Aziz would be displeased, and would probably find a way to blame him. Glenville peeked into the dining room. Marcel Dubois was not there yet, but the other three men were being led to what was clearly his table. It commanded a view of the whole dining room, and was even slightly raised from the rest of the room. Glenville sent Aziz a text. Larrington Hotel, dining. Aziz texted back. Check windows. Glenville frowned. He didn't want to ask for a clarification, but check windows? Glenville went out and walked around to the side of the hotel where he figured the restaurant was. He had no problem finding it. The windows were all lit up in the gathering dark. While he watched, waiters scurried around the head table pouring water and waiting to take drink orders. The maitre d' was talking rapidly to the three men, no doubt apologizing for the absence of Monsieur Dubois, and imploring them to sit down. The men were demurring, probably not wanting to be seated before their host. Through the brightly lit windows, Glenville could see it all in vivid detail. With a rush, he suddenly realized exactly what Aziz meant. It was perfect. 44. Marcel was an effusive, good-natured, congenial Frenchman. Of course, as co-owner of one of the finest hotels in Paris, he had reason to be happy. At the moment, however, he was unhappy to find himself in the hotel's private dining room. "My friends, it is so good to see you, but we should be occupying a place of honor at my head table, where we can see and be seen and enjoy the atmosphere. The private dining room is perfect for lovers, but we are not lovers. We are men of the world. We should be dining in sight of the women of the world." "That's my fault, Marcel," Teddy said. "There are people I do not want to see." "They could be kept away from our table. Trust me, my men are good." "It's a little more complicated than that. I had a couple of unfortunate incidents lately. It appears there are men who mean to do me harm."
"Have you gone to the police?" "I don't want to involve the police." "They can be discreet. Monsieur Bichetti could intercede." "I know he could, and I'm sure the French police could handle the situation, but as I say, it's complicated. Protecting me won't serve any purpose."
"It will keep you alive."
"I suppose there's that," Teddy said.
"You joke in the face of death?"
"No, but I take precautions. This room is a precaution. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but it's perfect for my purpose."
Marcel put up his hands.
"Please, I want to help if I can. What is the situation?"
I'll tell you as much as I can without violating classified material, which I have not been given clearance to divulge. I'm here undercover, investigating a foreign threat. Some of the enemy have penetrated my cover under trying to kill me. A sniper firing through a window into a brightly lit dining room would have an easy time of it. I apologize for requesting a private room. Marcel considered that. Under the circumstances, I have decided not to be offended.
Aziz showed up carrying a rectangular metal case. It could have held a very expensive pool cue, but Glenville didn't think so. The hitman had brought his sniper rifle, and Glenville had to disappoint him. Glenville tapped out "changed rooms" on his phone and held it up. Aziz looked at him as if he were a moron and tapped out on his own phone, "I can hear." "Of course," Glenville said. "I'm sorry. They were taken to the head table, but they went to the private dining room instead, away from any windows." Aziz made no move, but Glenville could tell from his blank stare that the hitman was blaming him for the situation.
"You will have to wait for Barnett and his friends to come out. They are not staying at the hotel anymore, so they will be leaving when dinner is over."
In response, Aziz pointed to himself, then made a circular motion, gesturing at the building. Then he pointed at Glenville, and then to the ground. Without further ado, he turned his back on Glenville and walked around the side of the building, presumably to begin reconnaissance of the perimeter. Glenville sighed, assuming, but not entirely positive, that the mute assassin wanted him to stay here. The meal was spectacular, featuring Chateaubriand sliced at the table with a wide choice of sauces. Teddy waited until the coffee and creme brulee to casually bring up the subject.
"You have a convention on rare animals next week." Marcel smiled.
"Ah, you have seen the posters. Yes, this is a wonderful event, very popular. The entire hotel is booked for the whole week. You cannot get a room. The nearby hotels are also booked. People are staying many blocks away. Select smaller animals will be brought to the hotel for viewings. The larger animals will be stabled on a farm outside town, and guests will be bussed there to see them."
"Is there a theme for the conference?"
"Oh, absolutely. Conservation. Many of these animals are endangered species. The hope is to attract money for programs working to prolong their existence. Besides showing the animals, the scientists will speak on panels and advocate for the vanishing breeds. Unfortunately, it isn't fair. Smaller animals can be shown during the talks. They have a chance to be adorable and win the heart. The larger animals can only be talked about and seen by those who choose to go by bus to the farm. I'm told this favors the smaller animals by better than 2-1.
"Do you know anything about any specific panels?"
"Not much, but I could get you a brochure if you like. Let me send for one."
"I'll grab one on my way back to my apartment. Are all the panels open to everyone?"
"They are open to everyone registered for the convention. You could register for it."
"I think the fee is a few hundred euros."
"If I did that, I could get into everything?"
Marcel frowned.
"I want to say yes. I believe there are a couple of panels that are invitation only."
"Interesting," Teddy said. "Could you find out?"
"I can and I will," Marcel said. He took out his phone and punched in a number. "Alain, Marcel Dubois, I know it's after hours. If you will forgive me, I just had a quick question."
Apparently, Alain was bending over backward to cooperate because it was not easy for Marcel to get a word in edgewise.
"Yes, yes, that's very nice of you. All I need to know is I have a friend who is thinking of registering for the convention next week. He asked if his registration fee would get him into all the panels."
"Really?
Which one is that?"
"I see. And how much would it take to get him into that one?"
"Invitation only."
And how does one receive an invitation?
No, no, I would not want to put you in an awkward position.
Teddy waved his hands. Diffuse it, Marcel. Tell him I am not interested in going. I just wanted to know.
It's all right, Marcel said into the phone. My friend does not want an invitation. He was just curious.
Marcel quickly ended the call and turned to Teddy.
What's that all about?
Teddy shook his head ruefully.
I forgot for a moment you're his boss. He takes a casual question as an order, but I don't want to alert anybody involved with the conference that I am poking around. I was just curious. Don't let me spoil a fine meal.
Perhaps another cognac would ease the tension?
Teddy smiled. I like how you think.
As they finished the meal, Teddy said, Now then, I have no intention of going to this panel, but I would love to see where it is taking place.
45. The conference room where the invitation-only panel would be held was pretty much what Teddy had expected. It differed very little from the other conference rooms at the convention, except those rooms were nestled next to each other and often featured temporary walls that could be slid back to merge two small panel rooms into one larger panel room, or four small panel rooms into an even larger panel room. The conference room was self-contained. All walls were solid. There was no window. Unlike the double doors that opened into the other panel rooms, it had one single solid door with a fairly substantial-looking lock. Teddy figured it might take him as much as a minute to open it.
"So, what do you think?" Marcel said.
"Mind if I try a little experiment?" Teddy said.
"No, not at all. Be my guest.
Go in, close the door, and have a conversation. Talk to Stone and Dino at a normal level, then talk like someone speaking on a panel. Will they be using microphones, Marcel?"
"In a room this size, I doubt it. We would supply them if asked. Do you want me to find out if any have been requested?"
"No, that won't be necessary, but let's make this test." Teddy went out and they closed the door. He waited a minute, but heard nothing. Finally, he knocked on the door. Marcel opened it with an inquiring look.
"Well?" "Perfect," Teddy said. "You can't hear a thing."
"And that's good?"
"It's good for the security of the panel room. I quite approve. If I ever need to hold a secret meeting, I'd be happy to have it here."
Marcel walked them back to the lobby and said good night to his guests.
"Now then," Teddy said as Marcel was walking away, "if you don't mind, I'll meet you back at the house."
Stone frowned.
"You have something to do?"
"I hope not," Teddy said.
Glenville was watching the front door when Stone and Dino emerged. He grabbed his cell phone and texted, "Other two left, not the target." Aziz could see that for himself. Since leaving Glenville, he had worked his way around the building and climbed a tree that commanded a view of the entrance. He texted back, "Circle Hotel." Glenville sighed. It was another case where he'd like clarification. He assumed what Aziz meant was to check all the exits to see if Barnett had gone out another door. He hurried to do that. A side door opened, and a man came out. He wasn't their quarry, but he was clearly a guest who was dining or staying at the hotel. Glenville texted Aziz, "Found one side exit, checking for others." Through the slightest crack in the side exit door, Teddy watched Glenville's shadow continue around the building. Then he slipped out the door and headed in the opposite direction. Teddy spotted Aziz in the tree just before he fired. That alone saved him. The little man impressed him as someone who did not miss. The rifle had a silencer, and the only sound was the whine of the bullet caroming off the side of the building. Teddy ruined his assailant's aim by doing the one thing a shooter wouldn't expect. He charged straight at him. He ducked to the side, dived into a somersault, and came up behind a potted bush. He couldn't see it, but Teddy could feel the rifle swinging in his direction. His gun was in his hand. He had drawn it as he rolled. He fired in the direction from which he judged the shot to have come. A yelp took